Hello, and welcome to the reading of The Courier, the e-edition, for Thursday, October 19th. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. So, hi, everybody. Let's take a look here at the front page of The Courier. Cedar Fall woman to run for U.S. House seat. Small business owner Corkery to seek Democratic nomination in second distance district. In Cedar Falls, Cedar Falls community leader and small business owner Sarah Corkery announced Tuesday she will seek the Democratic nomination for Iowa's second congressional district, setting up a potential challenge to Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson of Marion. The district includes Cedar Rapids, Dubuque, Waterloo, and Grinnell. The district also, Corkery, a first-time candidate and two-time breast cancer survivor, said also that she is running to expand access to affordable health care, lower prescription drug costs, strengthen gun safety laws, and help farmers modernize their businesses. She told the Courier Des Moines Bureau that she was spurred to run for the Northeast Iowa U.S. House seat after Hinson declined to sign on as a co-sponsor to bipartisan legislation introduced by U.S. Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, that would give metastatic breast cancer patients access to support and medical care years sooner than current law allows. The bill would waive the 5-month waiting period for Social Security disability insurance and the 24-month waiting period for Medicare benefits for eligible individuals with metastatic breast cancer. Corkery also said that she has worked on national lobbying efforts to raise money for breast cancer research, and also that the legislation would do away with unnecessary waiting periods and ensure patients get the care they need in their fight against cancer. Hinson's office also said that she is supportive of the Metastatic Breast Cancer Access to Care Act and plans to join as a co-sponsor. Corkery also cited Hinson's votes against the bipartisan infrastructure law and a U.S. House bill that would have capped the cost of insulin for all Americans at $35. Iowan deserves better than representatives who put partisan politics over our health care needs, including the right to make personal medical decisions without government intervention, Corkery said, referring to Hinson's support of a nationwide abortion ban. UNI promises homecoming to remember this weekend in Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls will be abuzz this weekend as the University of Northern Iowa celebrates homecoming. This year's theme is Panther Country, and the campus is already full of Panther pride as students, alumni, and their families visit Cedar Falls. UNI is also marking the one-year anniversary of the Our Town fundraising campaign. University alumni Adam Ambassador, Assistant Director of Communications, is proud that the campaign has been such a success. As of September, UNI had almost reached its $250 million goal. This campaign is the first of its kind, he explained. The university has received 27,000 unique donors. More so, 10,000 of those donors were first-time donors. Ambassador earlier. I apologize for that. I meant to say Amador. Amador promises that this homecoming will definitely be one to remember. Let's turn the page here and see what else. UNI promises homecoming to remember this weekend in Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls will be abuzz this weekend as the University of Northern Iowa celebrates homecoming. This year's theme is Panther Country, and the campus is already full of Panther pride as students, alumni, and their families visit Cedar Falls. UNI is also marking the one-year anniversary of the One Tomorrow fundraising campaign. University alumni Adam Amdor, Assistant Director of Communications, is proud that the campaign has been such a success. As of September, UNI had almost reached its $250 million goal. This campaign is the first of its kind, he explained. The university has received 27,000 unique donors. More so, 10,000 of those donors were first-time donors. Amdor promises that this homecoming will definitely be one to remember. All right, let's turn the page here. Iconic sculpture damaged in storm. In Waterloo, plans are in place to restore the iconic downtown sculpture that was damaged in a recent storm. High winds last week bent the neck of Song Sung Blue, the blue iron guitar on the promenade by the River Loop Amphitheater. The artwork is now surrounded by caution tape, and we're currently lining up the logistics of moving it, said Sean's Page, an interim director and curator for the Waterloo Center for the Arts. The plan is to relocate the Song Sung Blue to the University of Northern Iowa's Public Art Incubator in Cedar Falls. There, it will have its neck straightened and receive other maintenance work before returning to the River Loop area, Page said. It's loved by many, so we want to get it restored, he said. It's definitely a destination, and it is an icon. The sculpture had needed some restorations work with more than a decade of wind and rain taking its toll anyway, Page said, so that indeed became more apparent last week when the storm moved through town, causing vibrations to twist the metal. And we did have some windy weather last week, didn't we? All right, let's turn the page again. And we've got homecoming for a Texas tenor. Native Son appears for performance at Wartburg College in Waverly. Saturday night will be a homecoming for tenor John Hagen. The Waverly native, who is internationally known for his operatic Arias and a member of the Emmy Award-winning Texas Tenors, will perform an eclectic mix of opera, movie, musical, and stage favorites with the Wartburg Community Symphony. Stage and screen John Hagen in concert begins at 7 p.m. Saturday in Newman Auditorium on the Wartburg College campus. The concert begins the symphony's 71st season. The soprano Barbara Padilla, known for her performances on America's Got Talent, will join Hagen and the symphony for several songs. And let's turn the page here. This concert really showcases John's versatility as a performer and features some of the most iconic music in the operatic, classical, and popular repertoire. Les Miserables, South Pacific, West Side Story, La Traviata, and many more. John is an incredible singer and very talented, said Wartburg Community Symphony conductor Rebecca Nerdenheiser. It's a very personalized concert that reflects John's roots in Waverly and his ties in the community. His choice of Arias are very lyrical. This is very approachable opera, she explained. Now living in Kansas City, Hagen is excited about performing for a hometown crowd at Newman. I was on that stage as a little kid, a Christmas carol. I played in places on campus where there was grass, but now there are buildings. The campus are part of my growing up. It's cool to be going back, he said. Hagen, who has been described as astonishing, a superb tenor of deep musicality, made his Lincoln Center debut in New York City and created three tenor roles in the world premiere of The Lost Dauphin for Pamiro Opera, which aired on PBS. He has performed a wide array of operative roles, including La Traviata, Othello, and it's highly regarded for his performance of Verdi's Requiem and Beethoven's Symphony No. 9. The tenor has performed with dozens of symphonies and has received numerous awards and accolades, including regional finalist in the Metropolitan Opera auditions. Wow. Well, he sounds like he's really something. Let's see. What else we got? Acclaimed pianist performs with symphony in Cedar Falls. Expect a few twists and turns. Conductor Jason Weinberger offered that advice in describing what audiences can expect at Saturday's Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra concert featuring Beethoven and Bartok. This will be straight up classical music. And if you love traditional classical music, you'll relish this concert. But there are some really surprising twists as we explore the idea of virtuosity with these two composers, said Weinberger. The concert is at 7 p.m. in the Catherine Cassidy Gallagher Great Hall at the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center on the University of Northern Iowa campus. Construction is in progress at the center, and Dakota Street remains closed. Patrons being dropped off or wanting valet parking services will need to use the Ohio Street entrance on the west side of the center. The center's main entrance remains open for guests using friends' parking areas or parking across the street. The WEF Symphony will also be joined by acclaimed pianist Awadgen Pratt for Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 4, which has been described by some critics and musicians as the best concerto ever written. Weinberger said that the concerto in Beethoven's hands is a whole mother story, noting that the contrast of grandeur, lyricism, and intimacy in the composition written for piano and orchestra. Walsh recalled for dedication to big dreams in downtown. Local business and legal titan James Jim Edward Walsh Jr. will be long remembered for contributing his wealth, enthusiasm, influence, and efforts to improve the community that he called home. Walsh, age 74, died on his home on the 12th of October. Public visitation will take place from 4 to 8 p.m. on Saturday and 1 to 5 p.m. on Sunday at the Lock at Tower Park Funeral Home at 4140 Kimball Avenue. Walsh was known and admired as a real estate developer, successful trial lawyer, businessman, and entrepreneur. As a city attorney for Waterloo from 1992 to 2014, he served through 20 city councils and 5 mayors. "He will be missed," said Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart. He considered Walsh a friend and a mentor, as well as one of the most transformational members of this community that we've ever had. He had such incredible passion, care, and concern for this community. It just was amazing. Hart praised Walsh for his philanthropic heart for this community, its people and organizations, and for being an outstanding humanitarian. Walsh founded JSA Development, LLC, in 2001, a firm that was dedicated to the revitalization of downtown Waterloo. JSA has worked more than 40 downtown properties, restoring historic buildings and creating residential living spaces and commercial unit housing. More than 60 businesses, rather, eateries and pubs and homes to more than 100 residents. His firm also restored the Brown Derby Ballroom and created Wiggly Field Dog Park at Newton Park. Jim was a great visionary. He didn't want people to think small, but to dream big, then work to execute it. He said, "I had a vision for downtown Waterloo, not just saving historic buildings, just to save them, but for good economic use in the future," said David Deeds, JSA Development President. "Larger than life is a description that easily fits Walsh," said Mike Malero, VGM Group CEO. Jim was one of the finest people I've ever known, and he was always ready with a funny quip or a story. Remarkable man. All right, what else do we have here? We're now in the Cedar Valley section of the paper. Ex-cop convicted of sexual exploitation. In Allison, when officials found out about a Clarksville police officer, a 2022 affair with a 16-year-old girl, he told her she was going to put in a foster home if they believed him. If they believed her, the officer told the teen, he was going to prison. That prison outcome came one step closer on Monday, as jurors found the officer, 35-year-old Michael William Tobin Jr., guilty as charged on 11 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. The jury of 11 men and one woman deliberated for about an hour before announcing that they had reached a conclusion. Tobin remained silent as he heard the verdict. The teen, her older sister, and other friends and family were in the courtroom for the ruling. Sentencing will be at a later date. Two of the charges carry up to 10 years in prison. One carries up to 5 years in prison. And the remaining 8 counts are punishable by up to 2 years each. Tobin, who resigned from his position as police lieutenant for Clarksville in 2022, remains free on bond until sentencing. Authorities said that Tobin first met the teen while he was investigating a local sex offender who was accused of offering girls alcohol and cigarettes in exchange for nude photos. Tobin later began having sex with the teen after she joined the department's ride-along program. The charge stemmed from nude photos that he allegedly exchanged with the teen from nude photos he had the teen's solicit from one of her friends, and from allegedly showing the teen pictures and videos of other girls collected in the earlier sex offender investigation. This man is in a position of trust and investigation and seized these images, but he then used it to victimize the same people he was sworn to protect, said Assistant Attorney General Israel Kadiga. He was using this file to seduce this girl. As the relationship progressed, Tobin and the girl used a Google Doc computer file to communicate after her mother grounded her from her phone. Classmates later saw the teen talking with Tobin through the Google Doc during class and went to school officials. All right, let's move on here. Banking executive forecasts steady recovery. In Waterloo, a slow and steady return to normalcy was the message of the day at the 2023 Economic Luncheon. The free event is held annually, put on by Community Bank and Trust and Courier Media Group. It took place on Tuesday at the Waterloo Convention Center. Guest speaker Rand Westland, an executive, VP, and chief investment officer for Quad City Bank and Trust, discussed recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic's economic fallout. He said that what things were still off and recovery was slow, it was nonetheless going along. He touched on consumer activity, inflation, and unemployment, saying all were stabilizing. And he noted also that this recession is not on the horizon, according to Federal Reserve models predicting current trends. Thinking about recession, I can say this. We are not in a recession yet, Westland said. And I can say that I do not believe we're heading into a recession. I think all of these things have a movement behind them that the formulas are not picking up. He added that inflation rates, while still higher than where they should be, are trending downward. The increased prices are also impacted by demand outpacing the current supply. Meanwhile, there are presently more jobs than people unemployed, but the gap is closing. Westland said that this is not a new problem, but a bigger one, despite the positive movement. While not every sector is back at full recovery, progress is being made at a stable rate. What all this says is we are moving forward, Westland said as he pointed out. Recovering manufacturing rates, we may or may not be accelerating, not on our way to stopping, is what this is suggesting. And we look at this, and actually the parts that have been having the most struggle are beginning to improve, which is going to continue that momentum. Well, that's encouraging. All right, let's take a look now at the Northeast Iowa Area Escapades. Here are just a few of the events and goings-on worth checking out this week in the Northeast Iowa area. There are a number of things happening. We have first, on Friday, October 20th, Get Vertigo at WCA. Kurt Steckel will be featured at Friday's performance art series Vertigo at the Waterloo Center for the Arts at 225 Commercial Street. Steckel is a performance artist whose work deals with failure, moments of transition, and uneven events. He recently became a parent, and this performance is an exploratory work into the concept of parent goggles. Okay, well, that's certainly unusual. Friday, October 20th, and Saturday, the 21st of October, Chris Jones Headlines Festival. Cedar Grass Music Festival Friday and Saturday at the Oster Regent Theater, and the two-day festival will feature Spring Street Laurie King and Jet 63, the Bluegrass Blondies, Dry Run Creek, and the William Lawson Band. Hours are 5:10 to 10 p.m. Friday and 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday, and there will be workshops and jam sessions and an open stage featuring local bands. 1- and 2-day and VIP tickets are available at www.mycfet.org, or you can go to the box office, or you can also call at 319-277-5283. On Sunday, the 22nd of October, Toil and Trouble at the Arboretum, Witches Hollow, featuring a witch's dance and other Halloween-themed fun, is planned for Sunday Fun Day at the Cedar Valley Arboretum and Botanic Garden at 1927 East Orange Road. There will be a costume closet with new costumes for visitors to take home. The event is from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and is free with admission to the garden. Admission is $7 for adults, $4 for children ages 5 to 17, and free for children ages 4 and under Arboretum members. Sunday, October 22nd, Wash Day at Victorian House. The Cedar Falls Historical Society's collection manager and curator, Julie Huffman Klinkowitz, will present from Whiz to Dash, doing laundry at Cedar Falls on Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Victorian House Museum at 308 West 3rd Street. The free program is part of the CFHS Cabinets of Curiosity series and will cover the history of clothes washing and laundry businesses in Cedar Falls. Laundry artifacts will also be on display. Well, that's certainly an unusual thing to do. Saturday, the 21st of August, Party in the Zone, in the Fan Zone. A pregame tailgate is being presented by Hy-Vee and the UNI Football Hy-Vee Fan Zone on Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. at the UNI Dome. There will be a live DJ, free food from Hy-Vee, free soft drinks from Coca-Cola, along with the inflatable games and mechanical bull. The event takes place before the University of Northern Iowa's homecoming football game against North Dakota. And Saturday, October 21st, as we mentioned earlier in an article, John Hagen to perform. Texas tenors John Hagen, a Waverly native, will perform Saturday with the Wartburg Community Symphony. Stage and screen will begin at 7 p.m. in Newman Hall Auditorium at 100 Wartburg Boulevard. Located on the Wartburg College campus in Waverly, he'll perform music from operas and movies and musicals. Joining him will be soprano Barbara Padilla. Conductor is Rebecca Nertheiser. And tickets are from $40 to $60, available in advance online at warpburg.edu/symphony/ or at the door. And October 24th, which is the Tuesday, Upstairs Downtown returns. Community Main Street has revived Upstairs Downtown. Tuesday's event is from 5:30 to 7:30 in the Cedar Falls Downtown District, beginning at 310 East 4th Street. The tour will take participants behind the scenes of private living spaces and upper-level office areas. There'll be both finished spaces and works in progress. Tickets are $10, available at the Community Main Street offices or online at https://communitymainstreet.ticketspice.com/upstairs. All right. Oh, my goodness. Well, we certainly are approaching Halloween, and what couldn't be better than Dracula? Dracula, a feminist revenge fantasy, really. Thursday, October 26th, Dracula, Feminist Revenge, Theater UNI's new production, Dracula, Feminist Revenge Fantasy, really, opens at 7:30 p.m. on October 26th in the Bertha Martin Theater at the Strayer Wood Theater on the University of Northern Iowa campus. Performances continue October 27th through the 29th and November 2nd through the 5th. Tickets start at $24, available at Unitix, let me spell that, UNITIX.UNI.EDU, or Unitix, which is, again, is uppercase U, uppercase N, uppercase I, then lowercase T-I-X counter, in the Strayer Wood Theater. Admission is free for UNI students. So, looks like a lot of good things going on here as we come to the weekend and the beginning of next week. Let's now turn the page and see what else we have going on here today. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This page has the obituaries. Let's go forward a little bit first and read a little bit, and then I will return to the obituaries in just a couple of minutes. Supervisors, okay, UNI Dome funds. UNI asked county for $1 million to aid the renovation project. In Waterloo, with some hesitancy, Black Hawk County will provide a sizable gift to the University of Northern Iowa. Board of Supervisors on Tuesday approved $1 million in funding for the Cedar Falls University $50 million renovation of the UNI Dome. However, Supervisor Tom Little voted against it, and Supervisor Linda Leyland abstained. Supervisors Chris Schwartz, Tavis Hall, and Dan Trika voted approved the donation. The agreement comes after President Mark Nuke, along with David Harris and Jamar Thompson of UNI Athletics, asked for $5 million from the county in February. At that time, no decision was made. The UNI Dome will be 50 years old in 2026. Nuke said that the facility is significant to the entire county as economic driver that enhances the community's quality of life. Thompson also said that over 500,000 people visit the UNI Dome annually, resulting in a $17 million economic impact. About 200,000 of those visitors are from outside the county. And he noted that if the project goes forward with all the funding needed there, there would be an estimated increase of $1.9 million in future revenue. The first phase of the project would include replacing the fabric roof and constructing an addition to the west side. This would include a primary entranceway, also an elevator, more concourse space, restrooms, and also an expansion of the suite level. This phase is estimated to cost $20 million. In the second phase, the indoor track will be replaced, and the entire bowler, the seating area, would be improved. This would also cost $20 million. The final phase is expected to cost $10 million and would include updated lighting and graphics, a sound system, new marquee sign on the corner of 27th Street and Hudson Road. Schwartz supported the donation from the get-go and said that the economic impact was obvious in what it does for the county. It's kind of a depressing facility. It needs a facelift. It was built during a dark period of American architecture in the 1970s, he jokes. It can surely be brought into the modern era and serve the community for the next 50 years. All said that the UNI Dome is a regional asset and it deserves regional support. Yes, I would think that would certainly be true. All right, let's go back to the obituary news here. And before I do that, I'd like to remind you that you are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Services Network for the blind and the disabled. And I am your narrator, Peter Welch, and we are reading the e-edition of the Courier. And this is Thursday, and it is the 19th of October. Hard to believe. We are rapidly getting into winter, sooner than you know. Oh, boy. All right, let's take a look at some of the obituary news here. James E. Walsh, Jr. has passed away peacefully in his home in October. And let's see if there is going to be a service here. Public visitation will be held at Lock Tower Park Funeral Home at 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo on Saturday, the 21st of October from 4 to 8 p.m. and Sunday, October 22nd, 1 to 5. And little flowers, the family suggests gifts to the Cedar Valley Irish Cultural Association, the Cedar Valley Trails Partnership, or Main Street Waterloo. Jim would encourage you to grab a beer in his memory at Jameson's or Anton's, if possible, and spend some time enjoying the company of your family. Well, good for him. Margaret Bettis has passed at the age of 91, passed away peacefully at the Martin Health Center in Cedar Falls, Iowa, surrounded by her family. And let's see if I can take a look and see if there's going to be funeral arrangement. Oh, here we go. Public visitation for Margaret will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 19th. That's today at Haggerty. No, it's not. Today's not the 19th. Yes, it is the 19th. Excuse me. Sorry, folks. Didn't mean to say that. At Haggerty Weichoff Garup Funeral Service at West Ridgeway, located at 300 West Ridgeway, Waterloo, 50701. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, October 20th. Also at Haggerty Weichoff Garup Funeral Service, West Ridgeway location. Memorial contributions may be directed to Margaret's name, to her family, which will be later designated to the Alzheimer's Association. Rodney Lee Zuck has passed away. And let's see if we have any funeral arrangements here. I don't see anything here right here. So let's move on. Stephen Paul Copenhalver, age 56 of independence, has passed, after fighting gastroesophageal, adenocarcinoma. Boy, that's a long word, isn't it? Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, 21st of October, at the First Presbyterian Church in Independence, Iowa. And the burial will be held in Wilson Cemetery in Independence. Visitation will be held on Friday, the 20th of October, from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Independence, Iowa. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? Actually, a lot of people here today. Lois Byrne has passed at an age of 102 of Rhinebeck at the Parkview Nursing Home in Rhinebeck. And let's see if she has any funeral arrangements. A celebration of life for friends and family will be held at Abby's Funeral and Cremation Service in Rhinebeck on Saturday, 21st of October. Visitation will take place from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. A short memorial service will follow at 11:30 a.m., and a burial will follow the service at Rhinebeck's cemetery. Dwayne Jablinski has passed at the age of 85 at the Western Home Communities. Let's see, we've got Mass of Christian Burial at 10:30 a.m. Friday on the 20th of October at St. Gabriel Holy Family Catholic Parish in Rhinebeck with interment in the Oak Hill Cemetery. New Hartford family will receive friends 1 hour prior to the service at the church. And let's see, I think we've got a couple more here. Let's take a look here as we turn the page. Rhonda Mether Deeds has passed, and she was 61 years old at the North Crest Nursing Home of Cancer. I'm looking here to see if they have any funeral arrangements. I don't see any. Let's move on. Janet Barcharding, age 90, has passed at the Mercy One Waterloo facility, and memorials may be directed to the family. And the funeral service will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, 21st of October, at Lock Garden View Chapel, and they're located at 3655 Logan Avenue. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, the 20th of October, at Lock Garden View Chapel, the Burial of Gardens of Memories Cemetery. Now, let's see. And we've got one more. Roger L. Elbert has passed. Let's take a look here and see. He was from the Cedar Valley Hospice House area in Waterloo, where he passed. Let's see if we've got any funeral arrangements here. It just says, per Roger's request, he's been cremated and no services will be held. All right, let's move on here. Okay, let's see. Something going on here in Waterloo. Mason City man's attempt to sell PlayStation 5 ends in a robbery. In Waterloo, Waterloo police are investigating a report of an armed robbery on Tuesday night. Mason City man said he was traveling to Waterloo to sell a PlayStation 5 video game console he had advertised on social media, according to the police. When he arrived at the alleged buyer's address on Mulberry Street around 5:55 p.m., he was approached by a man with a gun. The gunman took the console and fled. No injuries were reported, and no arrests have been made at this time. All right, let's see what else we've got here. Let's turn the page. It's weather forecast time here with the Courier E-Edition today. And today it will be cloudy, you know, a shower and a little breezy, high of 62. Tonight it will be clearing up and we'll have a low of 42. Friday, partly sunny and warmer, high of 68, low of 46. Saturday, partly sunny and breezy, and a high of 65 and a low of 41. On Sunday, sun yielding to clouds, a high of 59, a low of 40 degrees. And the outlook for Monday, partly sunny and breezy, and a high of 61 degrees and a low of 46. And let's take a look at the National AccuWeather Forecast. A storm pressing on the east today will bring showers to areas from northern Mississippi through the Great Lakes region and into southern Ontario. Afternoon thunderstorms may also develop in parts of Tennessee and Kentucky. A budding storm will cause showers to occur in the coastal Carolinas, and much of the west will be dry and sunny. Okay, let's move on. Let's turn the page here. See what else we've got going on here. Okay, we are going to turn to the page of 360 degrees, national and world report. And let's see what we've got here. Well, the headlines here are what to know when choosing employee benefits and a look at all of the candidates running for president. I'm not sure if we'll get to that one, but we've got lots to read here. Let's start with the war in Israel, which is continuing, of course. And there's a banner headline here on the paper. It says, two-pronged threat. Faith communities fear rising hostility in the U.S. A fatal stabbing in Illinois, a gun pointed at protesters in Pennsylvania, vandalism at synagogues, and harassment of staff at a Palestinian restaurant all are raising fears that the war between Israel and Hamas is sparking violence in the United States. The tensions follow a familiar pattern of crimes against Jewish and Muslim communities, rising when conflict erupts in the Middle East and Americans have been killed or taken hostage. We have a two-pronged threat to American faith communities, said Brian Levin, founding director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. While it's too soon to say with certainty whether anti-Muslim and anti-Jewish crimes have increased during the war, hate crimes overall increased in the U.S. last year. And its annual report, which was released on Monday, the FBI It's estimated that the hate crimes increased by 7% to 11,634 cases in 2022, compared to the previous year, with 1,124 incidents. Anti-Jewish attacks were the second most reported hate crime after anti-Black cases. There were 158 reported incidences of anti-Muslim attacks, 92 reports of anti-Arab cases, according to the report. Civil rights organizations, however, believe that even before the Hamas attack in Israel, crime data didn't reflect reality due to a lack of participation by local police departments and internalized fear among the Muslim population. And Robert McCaw, director of the governmental affairs for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, in 2021, the Othering and Belonging Institutes at the University of California, Berkeley, released a study in which 85% of those who were subjected to Islamophobia, that they did not report it to authorities. The true number remains to be seen, McCaw goes on to say. In one of the most troubling recent instances, a landlord of Plainfield, Illinois, is accused of attacking a Palestinian-American tenant and her son with a knife on Saturday, purportedly because of their Muslim faith, stabbing the six-year-old boy to death and injuring the mother. The sheriff, prosecutors, and family all said that the boy and his mother were targeted for being Muslim. More specifically, prosecutors said that the landlord was angry for what was going on in Jerusalem and what was going on in also with his wife, who told the police that her husband feared they would be attacked by people of Middle East descent. In Pennsylvania, a man was charged with a felony ethnic intimidation after police said that he pointed a gun and yelled slurs at attendees of a pro-Palestinian rally near the state capitol on Friday. In Boston, the word Nazi was spray-painted across the sign for the Palestinian Cultural Center of Peace. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of anxiety and uncertainty in everything that's happening, said Abed Abiyoub, National Executive Director for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. He said that the group has received more than 100 reports, including verbal harassment, threats, intimidation, and physical attacks. It's very reminiscent of the early days of post-911, where people didn't want to go outside. They didn't want to send their kids to school, he said. They're just worried about being in public and being approached. In Dearborn, Michigan, which has the nation's highest Muslim population per capita, community and faith leaders met outside the city's police department on Monday. The city has seen multiple threats of violence in recent days, including from a man accused of asking on social media if anyone in Metro Detroit wanted to go to Dearborn and hunt Palestinians. We have to understand that these issues that are overseas are not just overseas. They're very much also issues here, said Imran Saha, the imam of the Islamic Center of Detroit. Historically, anti-Jewish hate crimes have increased during violent Israeli-Palestinian conflicts, said Levon, a professor emeritus of California State. In March of 1994, there was a spike in anti-Jewish hate crimes from 79 instances to 147 a month after an American-Israeli extremist opened fire on Palestinian Muslims in a mosque, he said, citing FBI statistics. In October of 2000, anti-Jewish hate crimes in the U.S. surged from 81 to 204 compared to the month before, after a series of violent protests in Arab villages in northern Israel. Levin observed a similar trend in May of 2021, particularly in cities with significant Jewish populations as New York and Los Angeles, California. In California last week, flyers spreading anti-Jewish rhetoric were left in neighborhoods and on vehicles in the city of Orange. And in Fresno, police said a man suspected of breaking windows and leaving an anti-Jewish note at a bakery, also a person of interest in the vandalism of a local synagogue. Julie Platt, chair of the Jewish Federations of North America, said that the synagogues and the Jewish community centers around the country have been strengthening their security programs, but that she does not want to see members of her community duck for cover. I think that the whole point of this is to terrorize us psychologically, she said. As long as I hear of no credible threats, I believe we should just lead our Jewish lives. Several Palestinian Americans interviewed Friday in a Brooklyn neighborhood with a large Arab population said that the atmosphere has been tense in the last week. All right, let's go on here. Let's turn the page and see what else we've got here today here at the on the Courier here, the E-Edition. Businesses take aim at fake reviews. In New York, some of the most used platforms for travel and online shopping say that they're going to team up to battle fake reviews. Amazon reviews cite Glassdoor and Trustpilot, as well as travel companies Expedia Group, Booking.com, and TripAdvisor said in an announcement Tuesday that they're launching a coalition that aims to protect access to trustworthy consumer reviews worldwide. The companies said that the members of the group, which will be called Coalition for Trusted Reviews, will look for best practices for hosting online reviews and share methods on how to detect fake ones. That will include developing standards for what constitutes a fake review and sharing information about how bad actors operate. Phony reviews have long plagued online marketplaces despite their efforts to eradicate it. Much of the problem is fueled by brokers who solicit fake customer reviews through social media platforms, encrypted messages, apps, and other channels in exchange for money, free items, or other benefits. Brokers can solicit positive reviews to boost sales for businesses or sellers, and they can also post negative reviews for competition in order to tank their sales. Let's move on here. Let's turn to the next page. Last month, Amazon said that two review brokers in China were sentenced to 2.5 years in prison and 3 years of probation after using messaging apps to advertise and sell fake reviews to Amazon selling accounts. The company has filed a flurry of other lawsuits in the past year against operators that it says were doing similar things. Last year, it also sued the administration of more than 10,000 Facebook groups that it alleged were coordinating bogus reviews in exchange for money or free products. Okay, let's move on here. Let's take a look now here in Tel Aviv, Israel. Biden vows solidarity with Israel. President Joe Biden vowed to show the world that the U.S. stands in solidarity with Israel during his visit there on Wednesday and offered an assessment that the deadly explosion at a Gaza Strip hospital that prompted mass protests in Arab nations apparently was not carried out by the Israel military. Based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you, Biden told Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a meeting. But he said there were a lot of people out there who weren't sure what caused the blast, which sparked protests throughout the Middle East. And Biden didn't offer details on why he believed the Israelis were not responsible for the blast. The entire world was rightfully outraged. But this outrage should be directed not at Israel, but at the terrorists, Netanyahu said during a subsequent meeting with Biden and Israel's war cabinet. Biden had also been scheduled to visit Jordan to meet with Arab leaders on Wednesday, but the summit was called off after the hospital explosion. His remarks in Tel Aviv spoke both to the horrors that the Israelis had endured, but also the growing humanitarian crisis for Palestinian civilians in Gaza. He told Netanyahu that he was deeply saddened and outraged by the hospital explosion. But he also stressed that Hamas does not represent all the Palestinian people and has brought them only suffering. And he spoke of the need to find ways of encouraging life-saving capacity to help the Palestinians who are innocent caught in the middle of this. Biden's overarching message was that the U.S. was firmly behind Israel following the Hamas attack on the 7th of October that killed 1,400 people. I want you to know you're not alone. We will continue to have Israel's back as you work to defend your people, Biden said. We'll continue to work with you and partners across the region to prevent more tragedy to innocent civilians. Netanyahu called the president's visit deeply, deeply moving, and adding, I know I speak for all the people of Israel when I say thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for standing with Israel today, tomorrow, and always. Netanyahu said that Biden had rightly drawn a clear line between the focus of civilization and the forces of barbarism, saying that Israel was united in its resolve to defeat Hamas. The civilized world must unite to defeat Hamas, he said. Biden also planned to meet Israel's first responders and the families of the victims and those being held hostage by Hamas. All right, let's turn the page here. See what else we got here. Let's take a look at some of the news digest. Hold on just a second while I get this page set up. All right, here we go. Airline rolls out plan for window seats. United Airlines says that it will start boarding passengers in economy class with window seats first starting next week, a move that will speed up boarding times for flights. The airline said in an internal memo that it will implement the plan on the 26th of October. The plan, known as Wilma, W-I-L-M-A, for window, middle, and aisle, was tested at four domestic locations and one hub. United said that it's shown to save up to 2 minutes of boarding time. And the change will begin with passengers in group four. Those with window seats will board first, followed by those with middle seats, and then those with aisle seats. United said that multiple customers on the same economy reservation, such as families, will be allowed to board their flights together. All right, let's see. What else do we have in the digest? GM, General Motors, will delay electric pickup truck production at a factory near Detroit due to slowing U.S. demand for electric vehicles to better manage its capital investments and to make some engineering changes. The company said that the factory in Orion Township, Michigan, will instead start making electric Chevrolet, Silverado, and GMC Sierra pickups in late of 2025, I should say. And Bloomberg Philanthropies unveiled a $50 million initiative Wednesday to help cities address global issues, including climate change, by launching programs proven effective in other cities around the world. All right, we are rapidly running out of time. There's an article called Benefit Basics, 8 Pro Tips to Pick the Best Employee Coverage for 2024. What I can do here is simply read the highlights of each step. Let's take a look at that quickly. Dig in. Are you married? Sit down with your spouse. Compare their 2024 workplace benefits and costs with yours. Read carefully. Some employers insert a spousal surcharge if you include your spouse. Consider flexible spending accounts. FSAs can pay for medical insurance costs or daycare costs. Check for long-term disability benefits. Consider legal services benefits. Look for new benefit offerings. Don't let sticker shock stop you. And finally, elevate if you need to. But again, there's more information about that on the page, on the 360-degree section of the paper. And that just about does it here, guys and gals. I am Peter Welch, and you have been listening to the e-edition of the reading of the Courier for Thursday, the 19th of October. And I am Peter Welch, and this is IRIS, the IOR Radio Information Services Network for the Blind and the Disabled. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk again next week. Take care. Enjoy the weather. Bye-bye, everybody.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, one in four people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.